Welcome back, folks. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here on The Mark Steiner Show and your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We are going to hear the mayor's inauguration this hour with commentary from our guest. On the way there, let me remind you, The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ Baltimore's Credit Union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ Baltimore's Credit Union is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com or steinershow.org is MeQ Baltimore Credit Union's banner. We are here this hour with our guests here in studio to look at the inauguration, which is about to take place, which we will jump to as soon as we hear it's on. Charles Robinson's in the house, political and business correspondent for Maryland Public Television, as is E.R. Shipp. Shipp, of course, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, journalist in residence here, and associate professor of journalism at the Global School of Journalism at Morgan State University. And joining us by phone is Charles Ellison, national correspondent for WEA and host of the Ellison Report here on Sunday nights at 9. And Charles Shipp, good to have you with us.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
So as soon as we hear that the inauguration begins, what we're going to do is give you the top of the inauguration this morning. When Kurt Schmoke, who's emceeing, will be hosting this morning. We'll hear what he has to say. We'll hear the Morgan Choir. We'll hear the speech by Governor Hogan. Then we'll come back to us for a conversation with all of you out there at 410-319-8888. And then we will, when the mayor gets mayor-elect is sworn in, we'll go to that, hear the introduction by Congressman Elijah Cummings. Then hear the mayor's speech and come back for closing commentary. So that's how we're going to roll today here on the Steiner Show.
And they're going to follow your schedule, Mark.
Completely. I control it all, Shipp.
Well, first of all, let me set the scene for those of you who are listening on the radio here. As opposed to this event being outdoors, as it has
been. In the War Memorial.
It is actually in the War Memorial Building. We are actually looking at the Morgan State University Choir doing a song. At this point, doing the introduction. On the stage is literally a who's who of Maryland political folks, including the mayor-elect, who will become the mayor in a short few moments. In addition to that, there are members of the congressional delegation, including John Sarbanes, Senator Ben Cardin,
right.
Elijah Cummings.
They're all there.
They're all there. Probably the most unusual individual that is at this event is the governor of the state of Maryland.
Well, let me interrupt you here for a moment. I mean, I wonder how, I mean, Shipp, and then go to Charles, the other Charles, whether it's that unusual. I think they have a relationship.
Yeah, I think both of them have been emphasizing how close they are and that this will be a sign of a new era in Baltimore-Annapolis relations.
Charles Ellison?
Yeah, that's the takeaway that I get as well. And that's something that she'll need. She'll need that. Those types of relationships, not just across the city, but across the state. You know, having that Annapolis connection, and she's hoping that she brings that to the table. The fact that she's spent so many years in Annapolis has been quite an active legislator, and she hopes that she can use that to leverage not just relationships, but any policy initiatives that she wants to put forward in Baltimore.
Mark, I'm going to give you, because you've been to a couple of these, and I've seen you at them. This is, I believe, in modern history, this is probably the first time a Republican governor has actually appeared, because Early did not appear at any of the mayoral events, and I think you got to go back to Tommy D'Alessandro.
Well, he was a Democrat.
Right, he was a Democrat. But
it wasn't governor either. You know, the last governor who did this was probably the last Republican governor who came in was Theodore McKelvey.
Theodore McKelvey.
What year are we talking about?
1958.
I guess who was right. A little bitty baby back then.
Not me.
Right. Well, I was.
Y'all were, yes. Yeah. But I think this is really kind of a significant time, I think, because they're presenting the colors now, and we'll go to this as soon as Kurt Schmoke gets up on the platform. But what we're seeing here is a real shift. There's a lot of kind of people who are not very happy with the end of Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake's administration in the city. Catherine Pugh won with a huge percentage of the vote, really. 57%, if I have that right, of the vote came for Catherine Pugh. after a very tight in the general election, I should say. Mm-hmm. After a tight primary with Sheila Dixon, so there's still this divide in this town around that because of Dixon supporters and more, mm-hmm. And you've got these eight new council people coming in, we're in a period I think of major shift. Let's see what that shift means.
Real quick thought there though, Mark, is that she may have gotten 57-58% of the vote, but the turnout, because of the mayoral primary. Was still low. I mean, it was low throughout the state. I mean, it was like 46% turnout. It was even lower than that, in terms of city voters. So it doesn't really mean that she has a mandate. And one other parting thought here, too, is that it is a strange time, not just because of what's happening in Baltimore, not just because of what's happened in Maryland, but also what's happened nationally. And Pew has been sort of flaunting a little bit, that she has some relationships with Republicans that may be able to create inroads for Baltimore on some level. She had a fundraiser or some sort of reception at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, which wasn't really reported on, strange enough. And she kind of boasted a little bit about that at the National Black Caucus of State Legislators annual conference last week in New Orleans, where I was. And I found that kind of interesting, not bizarre, but interesting. So, she assumes that she can play smart politics in this ensuing age of Trump.
Well, she has been saying that she's really needs Washington to come through on a number of things, including the consent decree. And maybe she really does have some connections. We'll see pretty soon, I guess.
Mark, let me also say that the mayor of Baltimore automatically becomes one of the chief spokespersons in the state. Baltimore is still the economic engine of the state, despite the fact the political power may have shifted down to the Washington metro area. We're still this economic engine. And, call it the E.F. Hutton effect. When she speaks, people will listen. And think about the number of governors we've had of this state who have ascended from the mayoral position to lead this state. So, you don't have to like it, but I'm going to guess that people will begin to turn to her to weigh in on statewide issues as well.
Maybe. I'm not, we have a major, I'm not so sure. Baltimore's been losing political influence.
Oh, no doubt about that. But it's because of the position of this city. And it's, we don't have that political clout like we used to have.
But Charles, was that true for Rawlings Blake? Was she a major voice?
Yes, she was. When I say that, what I'm talking about, the Baltimore delegation was close to having
folks,
influence.
I'm jumping in, so we're going to take a quick break here, and we're going right to the inauguration. I think Kurt Schmoke is about to begin, and we'll be back with our commentary. Join us.
Thank you all very much for being in attendance today. We have, as you see, a number of elected officials from all over the state on the stage. But because the mayor has to be sworn in by noon, I am not going to introduce all the people on the stage. We have, however, representatives of various stages of government. And to give brief remarks here at this important ceremony, I now call to the stage the 62nd governor of the state of Maryland, the Honorable Larry Hogan.
Well, good morning. Good morning. Thank you. It really is an honor for me to be here on this very important day. For the city of Baltimore. Baltimore has endured through some difficult times, but it is when the challenges are greatest that effective leadership is needed most. And I know firsthand that Mayor Pew is a fierce advocate for the people of this community, and I have no doubt that she will work tirelessly to address the problems facing Baltimore and to revitalize this great city. Maryland is stronger when our state and local leaders work together, when we agree to put aside partisanship and to put aside our differences in order to do the right thing for the people that we represent. This morning, I am incredibly hopeful about the future because Mayor Pugh and I have a shared vision for Baltimore. We both want to ensure that every single child has access to a world-class education, regardless of what neighborhood they happen to grow up in. We both want to foster a pro-jobs economic climate here in the city and to build better and safer communities. Residents here deserve a commitment from their leaders to deliver real and meaningful change so that Baltimore's future can be brighter and better than its past. As Mayor Pugh takes the oath of office this morning, we're taking an important step toward realizing that bright future for Baltimore. Together, we have a shared purpose and a shared commitment, and I could not be more confident that under her leadership and with a renewed partnership between the governor's office in Annapolis and the leadership in the city of Baltimore, that by working together, we truly can change Baltimore and Maryland for the better. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Governor. Now, representing our partners at the federal level, the senior senator from Maryland, Senator Barbara.
So that was the opening of the ceremony today to swear in the new mayor of Baltimore, the 50th mayor of Baltimore. Catherine Pugh, you heard just again, the former mayor, now president of the University of Baltimore, Kurt Schmoak. But what we heard was Governor our Governor Larry Hogan. And coming next is Mikulski, then Cardin, the two senators. Mike Miller will be speaking, Michael Bush, Senator Joan Carter Conway, Delegate Kurt Anderson, and the President of City Council, Jack Young. And then comes in another musical interlude with the Morgan State Choir, which we might get a chance to hear. But we don't have to hear every speech that was going on. But I wanted to. But we will come back when the mayor gives her speech and before she's and to hear her swearing in as well. But Charles Ellison, let me turn to you before we didn't hear you before we went to break. This is interesting to me because one of the things having Larry Hogan there, who had a very contentious relationship with the former mayor, the mayor is right. About to be the former mayor in minutes. Politically, I think Governor Hogan's going to be a very tough man to beat in 2 years. He's setting himself up in many ways like this. But give me your analysis of what you just heard.
Yeah, it is. You know, some people might find that a bit unusual. You know, how Hogan is, you know, kind of extending that olive branch to a Democratic mayor of a city that's not too keen on him. Because he is a Republican in a widely Democratic state, but it's really not all that unusual once you know about Catherine Pugh, and you know once again Catherine Pugh is trying to send like a national signal, not just to Republicans here in the state of Maryland, but you know also to Republicans in the new Republicans that are about to take over in the White House, and also Republicans on and off Capitol Hill, that she's here to do business. So, you know, she's setting a tone that she's not about she's not about campaigning anymore. She's about business. She's about governance. You know, kind of high level, that's her message. The only another thing, too, is that in a way it's like Hogan is prepping for 2018, and he's figuring he can align himself with someone as influential as Pugh, someone who's as influential in the Democratic Party, someone who's as influential also in the black political universe in the state, and fend off any challenges, any robust challenges in 2018, particularly from black politicians like, say, for example, you know, I hear folks like Prince George's County Executive Rashern Baker, his name keeps coming up as a likely opponent to Hogan in 2018. Some other names have popped up as well. Hogan wants to ensure that he's not dealing with that in 2018, that he gets that second term. So the one thing that kind of real quick that kind of strikes me as odd with this inauguration and this and the message that she's sending is that, you know, she's not including that advocacy community, that grassroots community. This is totally grass tops. This is all about the influencers and the political and business establishment in Baltimore and the state.
Ship.
And that's been kind of a rap against her, as I see it so far. The people who were most supportive of of Dixon saw her as a woman of the people, and in contrast saw Pew as someone who's deeply allied with big business, real estate, and all of that. But what I find is kind of interesting is that even those people who were in support of Dixon were not necessarily hostile to Hogan. A number of people I'm hearing are buzzing about how the Democrats have been in control so long and black people really haven't benefited all that much. So maybe we should be looking elsewhere. So I wouldn't be surprised if Hogan also has been hearing that and finds that it's a good time to try to make peace with people here in Baltimore.
Charles Robinson.
One of the visual that you're seeing here is that Catherine Pugh now becomes one of the leading female politicians in the state. Think about it. There are no women within the congressional delegation.
Right. None.
None.
Anymore, right.
And, you know, between her and several senators and others in the legislature, she is the woman, if you want to call it that. She's the one that may be able to bring the issues that women in the state can rally around. Obviously, she has her own parochial stuff dealing with what's going on in the city. But from the purely visual, she's the woman that women will kind of point to and say, well, you know, if Catherine Pugh can be mayor of Baltimore City, we can possibly be the next Montgomery County executive, because there is a race that's going to go on Montgomery County. And so that's that that other part of it. Last but not least, I want to talk about what Hogan said. He talked about a shared vision. He talked about a world-class education for every community in the state. Mark, you have been talking about this since the state has taken over the city schools. Catherine Pugh wants to get that power back. She will have a long,
right,
hard battle with those folks in Annapolis who are loath to give the power back to the mayor of the city of Baltimore to hire, fire, and set curriculum goals. But if I hear what Hogan just said, we want a world-class educational system. And that's one of those, you know, kind of like, if somehow the educational system in this city can move from status quo, because it's not really even status quo, it's below average. And I think if you ask anybody in the city that this is a problem.
So I mean, that could be an interesting. I could see the governor giving up the schools to the city as one of his appeasements in a very kind of smart political move as well. Should
I bet you it's on condition, however, that the city becomes much more amenable to school choice
and charters,
school options, charters, and all sorts of other options. You know, which, you know, those types of options are widely very popular with a lot of black and brown parents nationally, and you know, people feel like that's something that they would like besides a fledgling public school system. So, you know, that's probably what the deal is there. You know, it's interesting that, you know, Hogan focuses on that, but, you know, he's not really emphasizing as much, like, the need for economic growth, the need for mass transit. You know, you need all those other things. You need to have a much more kind of holistic view behind just a world-class education system, because you can't have much of an education system if you're not providing jobs and opportunities and mobility for people inside and around Baltimore.
Well, of course, he couldn't cover everything in his little introductory
right.
remarks.
Keeping it short,
but,
looks like.
But he did emphasize that there's now a renewed partnership between Baltimore and Annapolis. So I think there's some hope to be had there that he and Pugh will be talking about some of those issues you just raised.
One of the things that Charles said is really interesting. But one of the things you said is really interesting to me is that other than Terry Moore, who is the Republican county executive of Cecil County, mm-hmm. there are no other women executives of major
of any of county,
major jurisdictions.
That's right.
The president of the Senate is and everybody else is mostly white men,
mm-hmm.
except for Prince George's County and Montgomery County at this moment, and so it's kind of interesting that this she does become the woman.
But she
becomes a woman's voice in what's become an all male political climate ship, which is really strange.
But
is in many
she?
Ways.
She doesn't strike me as that type of person.
What do you mean?
Well, I don't know. I don't see her as the women's advocate. She's
right.
I can see her championing business and to some extent education. She always talks about this school that she founded. But I don't really see her necessarily as having projected herself as the go-to for whatever women's causes are. But again, wasn't Rawlings Blake kind of sort of in that position too? I mean, has it shifted all that much?
Yes. Well, think about it. Barbara Mikulski.
Well, we have Mikulski.
Mikulski was the dean.
Yeah.
And everybody else kind of, remember, she was trying to recruit some females to run for her office.
And
Stephanie Rawlings Blake was, I mean, she almost, girl, go on and get in there. And, you know, and she, remember, she said no.
She did say no.
But let me get to Shipp's point about women. Let me just tell you, in Annapolis, Catherine Pugh led the Women's Caucus on at least one occasion, I remember correctly. And that Women's Caucus had delivered more women to the Maryland State Legislature than most legislatures around the state, or around the country.
What period are we talking about there?
I'm talking about the period from 1980 to about 1995. Mm. But I know you want to go to the screen.
No, we're good. There's something that's happening. Pugh just jumped up and she's smiling and laughing, but I'm not sure what that's about because we're not hearing.
She was listening to us talking about her.
Well, let me set the scene again. Senator Mike Miller is at the podium. Right. And obviously he's telling a story about Catherine Pugh, who served in his legislative body.
So we're going to take a brief break in just a moment, just from Station ID, and come right back. And folks, do join us here at 410-319-8888. You can email us at talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Want to hear your thoughts on this incoming administration. Thursday is the swearing-in Thursday morning of the new council members, eight of them who will be new. Your thoughts on where our city is going, what this means, a Pugh administration might mean for you, what your thoughts are about it, 410-319-8888. We'll be back with Shipp, Charles Robinson, and Charles Ellison in just a moment. Stay with us. Don't go away. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. If you watch the visuals here of the inauguration, Mike Miller, the Senate President, just finished speaking and just gave Catherine Pugh a very warm hug. We know they are serious political allies and have been for a long, long time, which is why it makes her mayoralty coming up really interesting to see how this will function with the state. We're here with E.R. Shipp, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist in residence, and associate professor of journalism at the School of Global Journalism here at Morgan State University. Charles Robinson's in the studio as well, political and business correspondent for Maryland Public Television. Joining us by phone is Charles Ellison, national correspondent for WEA and host of the Ellison Report here on Sunday nights. And you all at 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at talk@steinershow.org by email. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. That's Mike Bush is now speaking, Speaker of the House. So they're really rolling through.
Well, they've got to get her sworn in by noon, right?
Right.
That's what they're going. And I also
we
know,
can't be mayorless.
And I know that from what I've heard from friends people inside the administration that this is going to be a short speech by the mayor. She's not getting a long speech, maybe 10 minutes long at most. So, which is interesting. Because she wants to get down to work or get down to partying for the rest of the day. I'm not sure.
I think it's more the party. Doesn't she have five parties to get to today?
A bunch of parties.
Those are receptions. Those are not parties.
Okay.
To meet the community. At least that's what her website said.
Right.
There's one party at the end. at the Hilton, I believe.
Yeah, that you pay money
tonight,
for.
That you pay money for.
Right.
So when she hits the ground running here, she has a lot to deal with. There is, with something you alluded to earlier, Ship, which was the consent decree by the DOJ. That has caused, we're not sure the actual cost, but it could be tens of millions of dollars to implement. And the battle over what that means to do that. And you've got an incoming presidential administration that will not be friendly to these kind of efforts to manage police departments around the country. So they might not take as active a role as they have in, under an Obama, or they may have had under Clinton administration. But she has to address this. That's one of the, and 300 murders. On our way to 300 murders in the city and thousands of shootings.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the consent decree, I think everybody wants that to be resolved pretty quickly, maybe before the Trump people actually take office, so that it would already be set in stone before Sessions becomes the attorney general. And it's clear that the new administration in Washington won't be as friendly to Baltimore or to major cities as the current one. But Pew has already seemed to be laying the groundwork for finding ways not to implement the consent decree if it costs the kind of money that we've been hearing. I think we've been hearing something like $30 million
right,
or so, right?
Right.
That was
right.
The supplemental that the current mayor put right, into right. To the legislature.
But Pew has been saying, well, the burden shouldn't be on the city to come up with this money. The federal government, if the federal government is part of this consent decree, the federal government has to come up with the money. And if she's saying that, and knowing that the Trump administration probably isn't going to be so friendly, I'm not sure what that means in terms of implementing all those parts of the consent decree that people are around the city are asking for.
And I don't think it's just lack of confidence in consent decree implementation, but say if there was some sort of fast-track implementation of the consent decree before the new administration comes in, then you got to look at consent decree enforcement. That's why, I mean, I really don't place a whole lot of faith in consent decrees. I personally think that they're rather toothless, and I've written to that effect in a piece a few months back in The Root. But, I think also she's hoping, though, in terms of its implementation, in terms of its enforcement, that she can leverage, once again, those Republican relationships. She has a close relationship, it seems, at least on the surface, with folks like Ben Carson, folks like Omarosa, who was a national surrogate for the Trump administration. So she's hoping maybe Baltimore might get some, and she's got this relationship with Governor Hogan. And as much as Governor Hogan publicly said he was opposed to or rejected Donald Trump, you know, he's going to be like every other Republican. Everybody is glad that they're now in trifecta control of the federal government, and so they're all going to sit at the table. They're all going to get on the field and play ball. So, you know, she's hoping that those special relationships somehow gives Baltimore some favorable treatment with respect to any sort of consent decree. So it might just be consent decree by optics alone, just saying, hey, we got a consent decree, but, you know, really you don't.
Let me also talk about the last 2 weeks, Mark, in this city. We have seen some horrific crimes and several murders. I'm thinking about the recent incident with Ricky Spector. I'm thinking about the naming of Public Enemy Number One yesterday.
There were three men who were literally executed inside of a home.
Right.
Personally, executed outside in West Baltimore.
East Baltimore.
Right. There's a lot happened.
Let me say that the honeymoon's today. Tomorrow, you are going to have to either try and get this police department to focus on preventing the city. I don't think it's any big secret that we're going to top over 300 murders. But if you want to make real change in the city, there's got to be some fundamentals or some other police tactics other than we show up at the crime after it's committed. And I don't know what a mayor does in that vein.
I think part of it goes to what you were talking about earlier, Ship. One of the divides that happened during this primary season was a divide between, and it was pretty ferocious, between Dixon and Pugh, between Sheila Dixon and Catherine Pugh. They were at each other's throat, but their supporters were. And the difference was that many people feel, correctly or incorrectly, that incoming Mayor Catherine Pugh does not have the pulse of a large portion of the black community and what they want. And that's something that could exacerbate tensions inside this administration with the city. I don't know that it's got that potential.
It does have that potential. And in that case, you would be carrying on from Rawlins Blake, because I think that was a rap against her, too. But back to this whole thing about how do you work with this policing. She has said over and over again that she's really committed to community policing. And if she can implement that, which I think Commissioner Davis is himself talking about, if they can implement that, that's supposed to get at some of this problem of being proactive in communities. On the other hand, I'm not sure what the police can do, Charles.
Right.
Besides show up at the end, because they don't know where someone's going to do these stupid crimes we've been seeing this past two weeks, for example.
Well, so, I think part of it, Mark, and you know, we're still monitoring what's going on here.
Go ahead.
I think that it's important that just like after Freddie Gray, when there was a spike in crime, this is a spike. And you've got to figure out a way to kind of either understand there was a shooting where five people in a room, they supposedly with the Black Gorilla family. We've been talking about the Black Gorilla family for the last 3 years, 4 years. You know, is there not a task force that's like, we need more intelligence. We need more of this.
So, and Charles, also,
but, you know, here's the big dilemma. We've spent, you know, pretty much much of the past couple of years right now talking about police instigated violence or police brutality, and rightfully so, understandably so. But I think you're going to have a shift back as far as, you know, the citywide conversation. You're going to kind of see this in a lot of other major cities as well, back to public safety, back to crime in those communities, because you do see in big cities like Baltimore a rise in violent crime. Not, you know, compared to years before, like going back to the 90s and the crack wars, it's not that bad. Mm-hmm. But people in the community are concerned. Black folks in major urban cities like D.C., Baltimore, Chicago, elsewhere are like, yo, are you guys going to focus on this? And so, like, for example, at NBCSL, I so many black state legislators who are in those communities, young and old, were telling me, like, off record, they're like, you know what? We've got to find a balance. We have to have both conversations. Yeah, we appreciate Black Lives Matter, but we also have to – we feel like we need to have that conversation too, because my constituents are concerned about crime, violent crime, a rise of it on their blocks. And so I think that that's the kind of shift you're going to see from Pugh. She's going to want community policing, but she's going to be more concerned about, like, an aggressive style of community policing that addresses those concerns right there on the street in those communities. You know, those folks, you know, particularly those folks who are taxpayers, particularly those folks who own homes, particularly those older folks, those senior citizens that came out and voted for Catherine Pugh. You know, the parents, families who are concerned about that kind of crime, that's what she's going to be focused on.
Well, you know, we seem to shift back and forth between these polls. Remember the crime bill that the Clintons are being blamed for now, and the things that O'Malley was blamed for later, too, of zero tolerance. They would say that they were acting largely in response to the people like those you just described,
right?
Black people being fed up with crime in their communities. And so we got these aggressive over-policing kinds of strategies. So somewhere we do need to find some kind of balance here.
So we're going to go back in just a moment. And Charles pointed out, and was looking at the Twitter feed, Luke Broadwater tweeted out that Sheila Dixon is on stage to show of unity after a close, heated primary election. So so that's interesting. They just had Jack Young stand up to asking all incoming city council members to stand as a show of unity, whatever that means. I mean, that there's a lot of flourish there. We'll see how that rolls when people get in there. But now we have the Morgan State Choir singing at this moment. So what we're going to do is, I think we should go back to the live feed hear the choir sing, then the beginning of the inauguration actually begins for swearing in. Let's go there and we'll come back to our guests. And do join us at 410-319-8888. We'll be right back. Or stay with us, I mean.
One day, when the glory comes, it'll be ours. It'll be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure. We will be sure. Oh, glory.
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 Oh, glory.
Glory.
Glory. Hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Every day, woman and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtapositioning us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through the sand with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground. The camera panned up. Can't point it to the mountaintop and we ran up. Day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be.
Glory,
oh glory.
All right, we're going to go right back into that. That was amazing. So go ahead, Bears, Morgan State Choir. They just blew us away here. And they both these young men, Cameron Potts, is it, right? And Quasey, whose last name I don't know, intern here at WEAA as well. And so
can we get them on a vinyl so I can listen to it?
That was just amazing. Yeah. They want to go
they actually
church.
Sang this at Morgan's memorial service during homecoming week, and I actually posted it on my Facebook page, Charles.
There you go. So we should go back, so I think we're about to have the swearing in of the mayor. No, not yet? Okay, well, let us know when that happens. We'll jump right back to the swearing in of the mayor. Another song? You want to go to the song? You want to... let's go to the phones at 410-319-8888. And Chris, you're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Chris.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I hear a lot of conversations now about getting to the root cause of crime, the increasing crime in Baltimore, and I agree with that. It's been mentioned on your show already. And what I would like for your listeners to know is in new Mayor Catherine Pugh, former State Senator Catherine Pugh, just last session, she sponsored a bill for nonviolent felony expungement. What that is people who have these nonviolent felony charges, especially drug charges, would have the opportunity to expunge the record after they've served the complete sentence, including any and all parole, probation, fines, fees, restitution, and a period after that they stay out of any interaction with law enforcement other than a traffic ticket. They should be able to expunge the record for the purpose of, instead of trying to teach people how to get around barriers, we actually remove the barriers from reentry. To that end, the same bill that she sponsored at the state level was passed unanimously on the floor of City Hall as a resolution. And so we have the support of our local elected officials. We have the support of our state elected officials and essentially unanimously in the House Judiciary Committee and the Senate Judicial Proceedings Committee from the Baltimore delegation. So there's a united group think around the effort. And even Commissioner Davis has spoken to the need for this to be addressed, that people are forced into a position that makes them think that, or they feel forced into a position to feel like the street economy is an alternative economy.
Right.
If we were to pass this bill in the state of Maryland, people could remove the barriers and actually start over after they've served their complete sentence. I just wanted to reiterate that if we you know, push that conversation forward again with someone in place who's already supported it, I think we can move the needle on the violence in the street.
You know, Chris, I think that you raise a really, really, really critical issue here, and importantly so. I think that, this legislative session coming up, it needs to be pushed harder. And I look forward to you kind of staying with me and writing me and getting this conversation even deeper on the air. I think that's – we have to have that done, and we also have to ensure that these records are expunged and that we have a different way of addressing the violence in our city. I think it's really, really very critical. So we're going back to the feed now. No, not yet. Okay, let's go back to the phones. And Riley in Northwood, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning, Riley.
How you doing?
Very well.
I wanted to make a couple comments about community policing. One of the things in the community is something called the Constitution, constitutional rights of the citizens. And a lot of citizens don't exercise their constitutional rights in interacting with the police and vice versa. One of the problems that I found is that you have those that listen and those who don't listen to the citizens in the community. Citizens and communities can take corrective actions. They know what's going on. But one of the things is that they don't get the support from the politicians and the people in power. So there's a disconnect. And I put together some proposals, partnership proposals, for community involvement and community assessment and community development to prevent crime, to help our youth, and to help our community. But I want to thank you guys for having this venue, because you're part of the solution also. Our media can help a lot.
We appreciate it. I would rather stay in touch, and please write to me at markensteinershow.org. We have to jump back. Former Mayor Schmoke is there. We're about to have the swearing in of the mayor and her words. Stay with us. We're going back to a live feed from the inauguration.
Around the state here, County Executive from Baltimore County, Kevin Kamenetz. From Howard County, Alan Kittleman. From Prince George's County, Rashern Baker. And from Harford County, Barry Glassman. We thank you, gentlemen, very much. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I call upon the Honorable Shirley Watts from the Maryland Court of Appeals to administer the oath of office, and would ask Catherine Pugh's brothers, James and Mardell, James and Ardell, to come up to assist in this process.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let us begin. Catherine E. Pugh, please raise your right hand and repeat after me. Raise your right hand. That was on me. I should have given instructions.
I should not.
I.
State your name. Catherine Elizabeth Pugh.
Do solemnly swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And that I will be faithful.
And that I will be faithful.
And bear true allegiance.
And bear true allegiance.
To the state of Maryland.
To the state of Maryland.
And support the Constitution and laws thereof.
And support the Constitution and laws thereof.
And that I will.
And that I will.
To the best of my skill and judgment.
To the best of my skill and judgment.
Diligently and faithfully.
Diligently and faithfully.
Without partiality or prejudice.
Without partiality or prejudice.
Execute the office of.
Execute the office of
Mayor of the City of Baltimore.
Mayor of the City of Baltimore.
According to the Constitution and laws of this state.
According to the Constitution and laws of this state.
And that I do further swear.
And that I do further swear.
That I will not directly or indirectly.
That I will not directly or indirectly.
Receive the profits.
Receive the profits.
Or any part of the profits.
Or any part of the profits.
Of any other office.
Of any other office.
During the term of.
During the term of.
My acting as mayor of the city of Baltimore.
As my acting as the mayor of the city of Baltimore.
Congratulations, Mayor Catherine. Is now signing the oath books as the 50th mayor of Baltimore City.
Please be seated. Well, now, ladies and gentlemen, I call upon the representative of 7th Congressional District, a man who has served us so well, so faithfully since 1996 in that particular office, and formerly a member of the House of Delegates, the Honorable Elijah E. Cummings.
Thank you, President Smoke, and to our new mayor, Catherine Pugh. Catherine, God has been preparing you for this moment, and your steps have been ordered. And we have come to celebrate this moment of destiny. I want to thank, first of all, Stephanie Rawlins Blake. And we had a very close relationship. Through ups and downs, I can tell you that every day she got up trying to figure out how she could make life better for every citizen of Baltimore. She gave her blood, her sweat, and her tears. And I just want to personally thank you, Stephanie, for all that you have done and that all that you continue to do. Give her a hand, please. You know, I'm going to be very brief, but Catherine, Mayor Pugh, a few minutes ago, you may not have noticed this, but there were a lot of people running up to her, giving her tissue because they were worried about her crying. I said, I don't know. They should have given me some of them. I'm the one crying. And the reason why the tears began to flow down my face is because I thought about her life. Emptying bedpans. Nursing home. Constantly doing those things that a lot of people didn't think of. The things that she did when she was unseen, unnoticed, unappreciated, and unapplauded. Constantly standing up for students. Standing up for people in my block on Madison Avenue in North. Constantly working hand in hand with our business community. A prolific and awesome legislator, not only in the City Council, but also in the Senate of the State of Maryland. She's been prepared for this moment. Prepared to make a difference. And so, Catherine, we are putting a lot of burden on your shoulders because we are asking you today to make our dreams your dreams. But we know you're ready for the task because this is not about good politics for you. This is what you believe in. This is what you wake up every day to do. This is a job that you wanted for a long time, and I'm so glad that God delivered it to you. And so it is, ladies and gentlemen, we welcome our 50th mayor. You think about all that Baltimore has gone through, and I'll leave you with this before she comes up. When Catherine Pugh was...
You are listening to WEAA FM Baltimore and HD1.
When young men and women were so upset, she began to sing a song. I didn't even know she could sing. But they were very upset and jumping up and down, and she had this calm demeanor, and I must tell you, she did have her high heels on. But she began to sing a song that is appropriate not only for that corner, but for this moment. She began to sing the song, "This Little Light of Mine, I'm Gonna Let It Shine." And so, Catherine, through your life, you have shown a light, and now God has brought you to this moment to shine a light on our great city and every person in it so that we will do what you said on that corner to those young people. You constantly said to them, this is the greatest city in the world. And so we are glad that you are here to lift us up. Ladies and gentlemen, the 50th mayor of the great city of Baltimore, Mayor Catherine Pugh. Those are the cheerleaders from Morgan.
First, giving honor and praise to God just for the moment to be standing in front of you and to become your servant leader. I cannot be more excited, more enthusiastic, more blessed, because I believe that everything that I've done to this moment has prepared me for this particular point in time. I want to say to Mayor Stephanie Rawlins Blake, thank you. Thank you for helping our transition be smooth. And to all the mayors who sit on our stage, I say that I stand on the shoulders of your greatness in terms of the deeds that you were able to perform as mayor of our city. Thank you for being here. And to our governor, I want you to know that you do have a partner as the next mayor of Baltimore, and that I've already prepared my letter for you to go with me to Washington, D.C., to deliver to the next president of these United States, Trump. Because when he talks about infrastructure needs of an urban environment, I say, that's our city. When he talks about creating jobs and opportunities, I say, that's our city. So I look forward to our partnership. We had one when I was in Annapolis. I look forward to our continued relationship. Thank you. And to the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House, see, the President didn't tell the whole story because he wanted to tell you about how I get on his nerves and how every bill that I brought before him had to be passed. But thank you. And to the Speaker, which is where I was initiated into Maryland General Assembly, thank you for your leadership as well. On the stage, Mr. President, former mayor, you pointed out the members of the various delegations, the executives of the various counties. What I want you to know, Mr. President, you raised a good crop of people. You got three members of the Finance Committee who now serve as county executives, including friends. And also to our Baltimore County and Prince George's County executive, we must continue to work together because what happens in Baltimore happens to the rest of the state. To the 7,221 folks who emailed me that I didn't get to answer your emails, to the 4,188 people who text me that I didn't get to respond to your texts, and to all the Facebook people, I just want to say that I'm your mayor too. I will be mayor for all of Baltimore. I recognize that we do have shortcomings, but we've had some great things going on in this city. I've always said that the glass is half full as opposed to half empty. And every mayor that follows another mayor should want that mayor to be even greater than they were. And I commit to you, Stephanie Rawlins Blake, that the work that you've done will not be forgotten. That when we talk about the 40,000 board of houses that were here when you got here and now we're down to 15,000 that the city owns, that your progress has been made. And I know the mayors before me faced even greater challenges, but we are so prepared. I'm so grateful for the team that I've begun to assemble I've got the best chief of staff in the world, Tisha Edwards. Thank you. Jim, thank you. And Pete Hammonds, thank you. Thank you for extending your hands and saying, we want to work with you to help make Baltimore the greatest city in America. And I know that we will. Thank you. I say to the president of the city council and to all of the city council members, we are partners. We have a lot of work to do, and we will work together. And I can't be more excited about my cheerleading buddies who are sitting right up front. Because I was a cheerleader at Morgan State University, and I'll be the greatest cheerleader this city will ever have. And to the National Black Caucus of State Legislators and my corporate board members, of which I've served as president for the last 2 years, continue to make progress. Continue to be the voice of African Americans across this nation. We need you. I thank you. Thank you for being here. To the president of Morgan State University, my alma mater, and to the Morgan State Choir, thank you for being here. I tell folks that Morgan State University is where I grew up. I came here from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, as my other sister would say, Trevos. That's where we live, Trevos, Pennsylvania. I grew up in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I tell folks if we were poor, I didn't know anything about it. Because everything we wanted, our parents provided. If we wanted to play the piano, we played the piano. Is that not right, James? If I wanted to play the oboe, which I really didn't want to play, but I ended up playing, I played the oboe. If I wanted ballet lessons, I got it. If I saw a dress on TV that I wanted, my mother would say, take a picture of it and take it around to the dressmaker. She'll make it for you. They instilled in us character and behavior that we were to exhibit all of our lives. As my mother would say, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. And I am blessed every single day for parents who cared about me, who loved me, and a father who told me that anything I wanted to be, I could be it. All I had to do was work hard for it. And I tell folks that stumbling blocks may come and roadblocks may be there, but if you work hard, you can get there. And so I'm excited. I want you all to know that we understand the problems that this city is facing, whether it is high crime rate, and I know that with the partnership of our commissioner, that we will move crime down. We know that people choose cities for two specific reasons. They want great schools, and they want low crime rates, and we're committed to doing that. We understand that downtowns are really important, but so are uptowns and neighborhoods. From east to west, north to south, every neighborhood deserves to be the greatest. And Pete, you know that 1563 North Fulton Street still lingers in my mind. Because it's a church that's been burnt out on North Fulton Street for over a decade, and I said that if it was standing on Roland Avenue, we would have tore it down by now. Because it is disrespect to the neighbors and the community folk who live there. We can do better, and we will do better. But it's about understanding that 76,000 people are unemployed in our city, and 3,000 people sleep on the streets of our city every day. But we will grow businesses in the city. We'll expand businesses in the city. We will understand the importance of the colleges and the universities and the institutions and the hospitals that are in our city, because they are the backbone of our city. They provide the jobs and the opportunities, and we just want our city to become more inclusive, more diverse. We will become that city. I am so excited, and I don't want to stand before you all long, because I got a long day. I've got four communities that are waiting for me, but I want you to know that we will move forward. And as the congressman said, and as Kurt said, and folks who've come to this mic have said, I can't do this without you. This is about our city, about our communities, and recognizing that it is so important that we get people working, that we understand that we have health issues in our community, and mental health cannot be something that we put in the back burner and feel that we can't attack it, because we can and we will. We can't walk by people and think that their problems are not our problems, because they are. We can change the problems that we're facing. We're up for the challenge. We're up for the challenge because the road is path has been paved for success. And we intend to be successful. But we can't do it without you. We'll move our city forward. We will face the challenges. We will make Baltimore great again. It is a great city, but we can make it greater. Thank you for the opportunity to be your servant leader.
And we now have a new mayor, the 50th mayor of Baltimore, Catherine Pugh. We're still here with our three guests to close out our commentary here on this inauguration day for the mayor of Baltimore. E.R. Schiff from here at Morgan State University, Charles Robinson from MPT, Charles Ellison from WEA. So your thoughts, Schiff, or your initial reactions to what you just heard?
Well, it kind of feels like the start of the baseball season or the football season. Everybody's kind of excited. You know, it's a new season. On the other hand, there are the skeptics and the cynics who are just saying we just now have a new team to target with all of our complaints and our problems. So the honeymoon won't last too long. She said, or Representative Cummings said, Pugh has wanted this job for a long time.
Yes.
So I'm very grateful that there are people who do want jobs like this one because it's a tough job.
Mark,
Charles Robinson.
I think it's very interesting, you know, in his introduction to for the new mayor, he talked about how she cleaned bedpans. Let me just tell you, that is one of the most difficult jobs if you've never, ever had to do that for anyone. That makes you very, very humble. And as he said, she had been prepared for it. But a couple of things I took away from this, she talked about being a servant leader. She talked about mental health issues. That doesn't always get talked about in this city often enough. The other part was she says people will only want to come here if there are great schools and low crime rates. And you know what? That needs to be said more often. And she asked for a partnership with many of the institutions, the educational institutions and the hospitals in the city to try and drive that forward.
And Charles Ellison?
Yeah, you know, some listening to that speech might have took it as her striking a somewhat activist tone on certain issues, on issues that they didn't think Pugh would raise or focus on at the start of this, you know, coming out the gate. And so Charles is absolutely right where, you know, she's mentioning issues in there that normally don't get discussed in like an inaugural speech. You know, the other thing, too, is that she sort of prides herself on being this no-nonsense, tough-as-nails, you know, kind of like the roll-up-my-sleeves kind of legislator or policymaker or lawmaker. You know, she brags about the fact privately that, you know, while everyone else was on CNN during the Baltimore unrest, you know, she was on the streets. And, you know, she made her media appearances here and there, but for the most part, she was focused on what was happening in her district. And so, you know, she's trying to send that tone as well. And so, you know, through this speech, you know, she actually focused more on kind of what those community concerns and needs were than she did on downtown interest or business interest, which I think was the expectation from a lot of folks that she would do, you know, it would be more of sort of a business interest kind of boilerplate kind of speech. Didn't strike me as that. I think it might strike some others as not being that as well. So it's just the big question mark here is her management style. You know, she is known to be a bit tough and a bit abrasive. So, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, how she reconciles that management style with, you know, people's expectations, their needs, and their wants from her.
And Julius White just phoned in, WEA's news director, who is down there at the inauguration. Julius, welcome. Good to have you with us here for a minute. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. And this has been an experience for me today. So it's a great crowd here. They're all headed downstairs for the luncheon. But I just want to touch on what I'm not sure if that was Charles that I just heard a few moments ago.
Charles Ellison was the last person you heard before that was Charles Robinson. Before that was E.R. Schiff.
Okay, great. what I heard here, and you guys can tag along if you will, I did not hear during Mayor Pugh's speech any overt promises other than she will come to work today basically with her sleeves rolled up, ready to go to work for the citizens of Baltimore, tackling the issue of the over 3,000 people that are homeless in the city, to be pro-growth, pro-community. She said towards the end of her speech that she knows that downtowns are important, but so are the bedrooms of the community, the neighborhoods of the community. So we heard words describing her from throughout all of those preceding her, from the senator's delegation to Governor Larry Hogan, who talked about off the top being pro-growth, pro-job, and pro-community. Everybody used words like fantastic, advocate, fearless, fantastic. And she has a built-in fraternity, so to speak, of leaders around the state and also in congressional halls, and some former colleagues from City of Baltimore that are willing to step in and have her any way they can help Catherine Pugh better the city of Baltimore.
Well, I'm going to thank everybody for being with us here these last hour or so to kind of watch this new mayor being sworn in. Thank you for your work. Julius White, WBA News Director, will be back on the air here in just a few minutes. Thank you so much for being down there for us live. I want to thank our in-studio guests here, Charles Robinson, political and business correspondent for Maryland Public Television.
Mark, real quick.
What?
The big laugh of the day came in. Why does it always happen when they say raise your right hand? No, your right hand.
She's left-handed, by the way.
She's left-handed.
She's left-handed.
And E.R.
Shipp. That's all.
And E.R. Shipp, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist in residence here at, and associate professor here at Morgan State University School of Global Journalism. Always good to have you in the studio, Shipp. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Charles Ellison, national correspondent for WEA, host of the Ellison Report every Sunday night here on WEAA at 9 p.m. and a frequent guest here on the Mark Steiner Show. Charles, always good to have you with us. Thank you so much.
It's always good to be here, Mark. Thanks again.
And on our way to go to break here and to bring in Sandy Mallory, let me just to remind you that we want to invite you to join us for the 14th annual Annapolis Summit on January the 11th at the Governor Calvert House in Annapolis. It's your chance to hear and have your voice heard and questions answered when we talk with Governor Larry Hogan, who you just heard, Senate President Mike Miller, and House Speaker Michael Bush. Event details and information about sponsorships are at thedailyrecord.com/Annapolis-summit. For tickets, you can go to call Haley Poling at 443-524-8161 or email hpoling, at thedailyrecord.com. But do join us here, 7 to 10 a.m., your chance to have your voice heard with our state leaders. The Annapolis Summit is sponsored by The Daily Record, Stevenson University, Hopkins Center for a Livable Future, Alexander and Cleaver, VPC, and WEAA. And thank you all for tuning in and being with us today and making our show what it is. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our senior producer is Mark Gunnery. Our producer is Imani Spence. Our research producer is Calvin Perry. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our theme music is by Al Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org. To podcast the show and share it with your friends, visit us on the web at steinershow.org or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Stay tuned now for it's time for Cool Vibes for your midday with our dear friend Sandy Mallory. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.